You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, go away you fur. With me this week is Blake, Iowa Gopher.
Happy to be back from Champaign, alive and kind of well.
And U Street.
Hey y'all.
In case you're wondering where Gopher Guy 05 is, he committed seppuku down in Champaign. He wishes you all well. And should he rise from the ashes, that is the current state of the season, he will rejoin the pod in a future episode. So yeah, three of us went down to Illinois. Two of us came back to join this pod. Street watched from afar. My takeaways are as follows. Illinois is a hell of a lot better than they've been in a long time. And Minnesota is doing things wrong that they were not doing earlier in the year in a way that baffles me. In ways that go beyond, you know, better competition. Can someone enlighten me as to what the hell is going on?
I can take a crack at what's going on. As I mentioned at in about sort of week four, one problem that the University of Minnesota football team had from an observer standpoint is we actually didn't know how good they were because Michigan State was really bad. And one of the key things that we never learned in the non-conference was how good this passing offense was going to be, because it's in fact really easy to pass the ball when Mo is averaging 9 yards a carry. And the offense works very well. That's sort of the peak of how good this offense is going to be. What has happened over the last couple of weeks, when Mo was out, Purdue dominated the offensive line. I think Quinn Carroll in particular has been getting a lot of flack, but I don't think it's just Quinn Carroll. I just think it's been relatively easier to pick on him. I think the right side of the line in general has not done a very good job. The line is not doing what it needs to do. Because the line is not doing what it needs to do, when paired with not arguably the best running back to come through, at least at a college level at Minnesota in the last 15 years, the running backs behind at a substantially more replacement level aren't able to get any hole. They're getting hit very quickly. They're not able to break through yardage. So there goes the run game. The second problem is the wide receivers, since especially, unfortunately, the loss of the season, Chris Altman-Bell out for the season, the wide receivers are unable to do anything. They're not getting separation. Depending on the wide receiver, they might not be trying very hard to get separation either, which is a separate point. When they're in 50-50 situations, they're regularly getting beat and outmuscled for balls. That's a problem. So when Tanner Morgan is trying to throw a pass, he's often going to throw it at best to a partially covered wide receiver, or at worst, the interceptions that you saw on Saturday, and or having to tuck it and run for a couple of yards. And deeply, unfortunately, in the Illinois game, apparently it's fine to punch someone in the head if you do it on accident. So that's the second problem. So structurally, at the line, we have a problem that prevents the running game from doing anything. When Minnesota becomes unidimensional as a passing game, they don't have an actual playmaking wide receiver who can consistently get open and or consistently do incredible things if partially covered. Finally, Tanner Morgan not blameless here, because Tanner Morgan has also not been, over the last couple of weeks, pre what was almost certainly a concussion, and that's going to be a challenge going forward, but pre that also had some challenge in how it is that he is going to be able to direct this offense. And you basically need Tanner Morgan to be perfect if every single opening he has to throw a pass is an incredibly tight window. And Tanner Morgan is many things, but I would not say that he is an NFL talent quarterback, which is what he's currently being asked to be in this offense because he's getting no help from any of his wide receivers and frequently his line.
Blake, where do you stand? Do you echo most of those sentiments? Do you see other problems that are, in your mind, the biggest issues for the Gophers right now?
I mean, that was a pretty, exhaustive, surgical. That was a surgical review of all the issues they have on the offensive side of the ball. I don't really have much to add. I mean, he kind of nailed it in the head, especially with the offensive line. I mean, if you don't have a good offensive line, like, that's going to limit what you can do on offense in the run game and the passing game. I mean, it all starts up there for me. And I mean, this is a team that we thought the offensive line looked fairly good those first four games. But again, you know, level of competition suspect. I mean, we thought Michigan State had a good defensive front and maybe they do, but the rest of the team's got some issues. Good enough to beat Wisconsin though. So I'll give them credit for that. But offensively it's just really tough sledding right now. And I had to look it up. If Tanner is not able to go this Saturday, this will be the first game where he has not started for Minnesota since, I think, October 20th, 2018. So that would end his streak of, I don't know how many games, consecutive starts for Minnesota quarterback, which is just kind of unthinkable that we would have thought next year would be our first year without Tanner, but could very well be this Saturday. So I can't say there's a ton of optimism on that side of the ball coming out of the Illinois game, unless Kirk Straka can work some miracles and somehow get his wide receivers to be, you know, more aggressive going up for the ball, high pointing the ball, you know, winning contested catches, running better routes, get their offensive line to, you know, block consistently and pass protection. There's a lot going on there, and I don't have a ton of fixes in the short term.
It's also, to be frank, assuming that Tanner Morgan had a concussion or concussion-like symptoms last Saturday, which, given the optics of how Tanner Morgan went down, seems quite likely to me, Tanner Morgan should not be playing this week. Even if he thinks, oh, I'm 80% or whatever, Tanner Morgan should not be playing this week because Tanner Morgan got punched in the head, clattered down on the ground, and was down for an extended period of time and never returned. It is implausible to me that Tanner Morgan is actually 100%. And that has nothing to do with Tanner Morgan as a competitive person. It's rather from a coaching staff perspective. I think you need to protect your player and give him a week off at minimum.
And the medical tent was right in front of where we were staying at the Illinois game. I've never seen him like that. He was just like, he's just walking gingerly. It was hard to tell what was wrong with him because he was just walking so slowly and so gingerly. I didn't know if like he was trying to protect something that he had injured. Like when Fleck mentioned upper body injury later, I thought maybe collarbone, but I mean, in all purposes, probably a concussion, but he looked kind of out of it. Not like stumbling or wobbly, but just walking very slowly and very deliberately. It was kind of a strange sight to see with him. So, I mean, yeah, in all realistic, he shouldn't be playing this Saturday. Again, we don't know the specifics of his injury because Fleck loves to be vague about injury updates. But, I personally would be very surprised if we see him on Saturday.
Also, I will highlight again, this is not a complaint about the refs in general. Minnesota lost through no fault of the refs. Though the first interception for Tanner Morgan likely is offsides or real close. But that's not why they lost the game. However, the fact that there is no mechanism whatsoever in college football right now to review someone punching somebody in the head is ludicrous. And I don't mean to say that the Illinois player intended to haul off and whack Morgan in the temple. I genuinely don't think it was attempted to be malicious. I think the Illinois player, the defensive player, is trying to basically punch the ball out, which if a quarterback's running, yeah, that person does not have lots of reps just trying to hold on to the ball. I, too, would think it's a reasonable thing to try and punch the ball out. But the rules of football rarely require intent to deliver a penalty. And it's hard for me, if we're actually going to say that we're going to care supposedly about quote-unquote player safety, that intentional or not, if you punch somebody in the head, nothing happens to you. Because ideally, what you want to do is deter people from thinking it might be a good idea to risk potentially punching somebody in the head. Also, from a defensive player, helmets hurt. So there's an added reason to maybe have someone think twice about whether or not they should throw their hand up next to somebody's temple. That's a failure of officiating. And if the officials were correct, then it's an absolute failure of the rulebook. And I would say exactly the same thing, just to be clear, if the jersey colors were swapped.
I'll be honest, I had stepped out during that section of the game, and I saw the punch on the TVs in the concourse. And I, you know, stepped away to go to the restroom. And when I came out, the game still hadn't started. I assumed what they were reviewing was targeting. And I was like, oh, okay, makes sense. Punch dude in the head. Somehow that's targeting. Makes sense to me. No, no, no. They were reviewing whether or not he got a first down. I was like, what? That
now, Chris,
doesn't make sense to me. But
I'm glad you mentioned you're stepping out to the bathroom, because I understand you had some potential fisticuffs of your own advance.
Illinois fans, you are definitely listening to this podcast, so I'm sure I'm reaching my intended audience here. Learn to enjoy your team winning. Some asshat, like, I brush by him into the restroom, and he wants to make World War III out of it. In my defense, I probably shouldn't have shushed him and waved him away with my hand. That probably enraged him further, but the fact that he was bothered at all that in a crowded restroom somebody might, like, brush into you. Illinois fans, get your act together. You have a very good team. You're going to win the Big Ten West. That's my prediction. We'll be talking about more of those in a moment. There's no reason to fight in the frickin' bathroom.
What's the card? So for reference to our viewers, as has been mentioned previously, Chris is a water demon. Part of the reason why this is the case is that he's 1,000 feet tall, which means that if he moves incorrectly, his head will actually create clouds. So I'm curious, in this particular, if we actually threw down, what was the card like?
I mean, he was maybe 6'4". He looked wiry. I don't think he had my reach. Certainly, you know, I have more girth and weight to throw behind my punches than his wiry self. But, you know, ultimately, it shouldn't come down to that. It's a bathroom. We're not here for fisticuffs.
Yeah, I think as a general view, fighting in a men's restroom or any restroom is a suboptimal choice always. But in particular, for our listeners, as me personally, as a not tall human, it's never occurred to me, you know who I should like really get aggressive with? The person who is like 6 inches and potentially 30 or 40 pounds bigger than me. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't generally get challenged to fight people. Like, I'm a goofball. Most people would probably win if they got me to fight them. But nobody goes there because I'm a giant and people don't generally, you know, see giants and think, let's fight giants.
Water demon privilege right here.
Hey, whoa. I want to point out, I went to this game. It was beautiful the entire weekend.
Was it beautiful? Was it beautiful? Because I recall the team that we support losing in catastrophically ugly fashion. I would.
Yeah, but you got to be able to. You have to be able to find beauty even in those moments. Otherwise, you're just going to drive yourself insane. We're fans of Minnesota sports. If you can't find beauty in the midst of disaster, our lives are going to be very, very short and brutal.
Are you the person who writes philosophy quotes in the bathroom? Is that you? Are you graffitiing that?
No, I'm the one who, like, by the end of the game, I'm like thinking, is there anything else around the stadium I feel like photographing?
Blake, did you try and
creating
fight
art makes me happy.
I didn't try to fight an Illinois fan. They were very, I'll say, chatty after the game. They were either chanting I-L-L-I-N-I or just trying to strike up, charitably say they're trying to strike up conversation with me after the game. Yeah, they were a very cocky bunch. And I would say they kind of take after their team. This Illinois defense was like they had swagger. Like they were like call them cocky, call them confident. That was kind of the energy I noticed from their team, and yeah, it definitely translated to the fan base too. One year,
They were
one
good. They were
they
good.
were good. They backed it up, and like I was like, you know, be confident, talk your shit, you can back it up. Yeah, their fan base definitely is taking their cues from that. I would say, you know, they're good at football for the first time in I don't know how long, and they're making the most of it, I guess.
Did you enjoy the general trip to Champaign? Because I, to be fair, I, as mentioned, was not there. I actually don't think it is that much of a problem if there's some road fan and your team wins that you know, talk some stuff at them, though it probably would be good for everyone if we maybe were more charitable and whatnot. But in terms of just as a road trip, so Chris and Blake, you've now been on a variety of road trips in the Big Ten. Where do you put Champaign, Illinois?
I would say the drive itself, not even just for. So I live in Chicago. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. The drive itself was not fun. I hate that. Like it was one of the most boring drives. And I drive to Iowa all the time for family reasons. So if I say a drive is boring, like you know, it's boring. And the drive to Champaign, yeah. I mean, the town itself, fine. We didn't spend a ton of time exploring it. Chris can talk a little bit about some of the places he and Andy went, but we both talked about the stadium is actually pretty decent. Nothing special.
For an old stadium, they've done a nice job renovating it out.
They have. It look like it's in good shape. They had a good crowd there too. I imagine if I was an Illinois fan, it would have been a fun atmosphere. They did have a lot of people, like, you know, they had huge tailgating lots, and a lot of fans out there too. So I say a good atmosphere. Yeah, I mean it was fine. I didn't think there was anything special about it, to be honest with you, but I don't know if Chris feels any differently.
No, I wouldn't rank it as one of my favorite destinations or anything. I will compliment the folks at Riggs Brewing on the southeast side of
We're not
town
sponsored by
down the...
them, but we would like to be.
Yes, Riggs Brewing, your beer was delicious and you brought in fantastic food trucks. We're happy to keep plugging you despite not being from your town because I enjoyed that place very much actually. But yeah, no, as a whole, like, I mean, I'll probably go back. It's close enough to Cincinnati that I'll definitely make the road trip again. But it wouldn't make my list as like an automatic, you know, place to go. All right, so I've laid my marker down. I think Illinois wins the Big Ten West. Does anybody disagree with me?
What are the tiebreakers right now?
Well, Illinois and Purdue haven't played.
So yeah, those two teams only have one loss though in the Big Ten
Yeah,
West.
so they will have to play each other, but outside of that, there's no tiebreakers in play when it comes to those two.
And Illinois
We
schedule-wise, Illinois has Michigan left outside the West, and I think maybe one other Big Ten East team. I'm looking at Purdue's now because I know Purdue. I had picked them early in the season to finish kind of high in the Big Ten West because they had sort of a soft schedule. I think they've got some favorable crossover games. I'm pulling it up right now.
Well, I think I'll start with a base prediction. My base prediction is that at the end of the year, Nebraska will finish lower than Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. Because currently, they are ahead in the standings over those three teams.
That's a bold take.
Yeah, I would suspect, at least at this moment, from the teams that I have seen play, I thought that Purdue was in some sense better than Illinois because I thought when they played Minnesota, they were a bit more injured. And while Minnesota is arguably not a very good barometer, I think Minnesota right now functions as a middle of the pack Big Ten West team. I do not see Minnesota going on some magical title winning Northwestern-esque thing. So I might give it to the Boilermakers, but I do think that right now the teams that are tied for the lead in the Big Ten West, one of them will be your conference leader. And it will be the winner of the Illinois-Purdue game, which right now I'm slotting to be Purdue.
So Illinois's got Nebraska, Michigan State, Purdue, Michigan, Northwestern. So their big games there were Purdue and Michigan. And then Purdue's crossovers were Penn State, Maryland, and Indiana. They lost to Penn State, beat Maryland. Now they've got Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, Northwestern, Indiana. So I would say, yeah, if they lose to even if Illinois loses to Michigan, they still have a tiebreaker over Purdue. So I'd say, yeah, that Purdue-Illinois game kind of looms large.
Just as we all thought at the beginning of the season.
Truly.
The Purdue-Illinois showdown for the West.
I mean, I know it was week one, but I still don't understand how Illinois lost to Indiana. I really don't.
They had yet to get their swagger. No one had tried to fight anyone in a bathroom. These things take time. Takes reps.
Takes reps to build that up. Well, what do we think, Minnesota, moving forward? I mean, I don't think they beat Penn State, certainly. Not when they're probably, you know, playing Ethan first start. It's going to be on the road, night game, whiteout. That doesn't feel like a real likely. I mean, heck, you put Tanner in there. I don't feel like that's a win for Minnesota.
I think it's actually less about who's playing quarterback and more about who's playing the wide receiver. To be blatantly, brutally honest, I think there will be things for which Ethan will be a clear upgrade over Tanner. It is absolutely the case that Ethan throws a better ball than Tanner does. But Tanner is a six-year quarterback. He's seen more things. He makes more decisions, arguably, that should be better. Certainly should be better than a quarterback, assuming Morgan is not playing, the quarterback making his first start ever. So in that sense, yeah, I somewhat doubt we're getting the Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe experience here. What I do think, though, is far more important from the standpoint of Minnesota as a team is whether or not they can figure out a way, and some of this, frankly, is going to have to be structural from an offensive coordinator standpoint, to get more receivers open and to get them open quickly. Because this offensive line right now is not able to hold anybody off for any extended period of time. Bringing in a new quarterback, almost certainly you're going to have one read and just go. It's unlikely that they're going to run a lot of things for Ethan, for which he's going to want to go through multiples of his progression, of multiple reads. So if you're already in the situation where it's like one read and go, might as well try and figure out if you can do other things that can improve the wide receivers. If the wide receivers can get open and not drop a ball in the end zone, I think it's going to be much closer. I am skeptical of that until proven otherwise.
I mean, Blake, it feels like to me best outcome for the rest of the season is 9-3, and that would take some doing. Like, where do you, if you had to gut check yourself right now, where do you think Minnesota finishes with the second half of the year?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think best case scenario, I mean, if we're going to use Street's beginning of season logic, best case scenario at this point is 10-2. not eliminating the possibility of winning Saturday. It's as unlikely as it may be.
Yes, technically, though not mathematically likely, that is the best outcome that could happen.
Well, you know, when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor.
That actually got used in our section of the stadium by a Gopher fan at one point. So in case you were wondering how Saturday went from no other context.
But I would say, though, after the Penn State game, I mean, it's probably just going to be a rock fight week in and week out, unless, as you know, Street said, the wide receiver position takes a step forward, things improve on offense. I mean, there's no one down that stretch that's real intimidating. I think what will probably happen, too, is they'll drop a game they shouldn't. Nebraska doesn't look totally lost on offense. Iowa, we haven't beaten them in 7 years. So God only knows, even with their god-awful offense, they could find a way to drop that one. So it's tough to say right now, but I mean, at a minimum, you could say after the Penn State game, they should be in every game from there on out. So I would think 8-4, 9-3. But yeah, really need to see some positive supports on offense before we start predicting, 8 or 9 wins after this.
You know, I can predict right now that Iowa could lose every game the rest of the year if they beat Minnesota. Kirk's response to why hasn't he fired Brian will be, but we beat Minnesota. Didn't you see when we beat Minnesota?
It's why the
I don't
racism
want.
is okay.
Oh, God. It's so stupid. Like, please, can we just beat that horrible, horrible, horrible offense led by that horrible family? That would be nice.
My other prediction before we may learn a little bit about Penn State is that also, again, it's a prediction, so I suppose until proven otherwise, the quadrangle of hate games are gonna suck from a neutral standpoint.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They're not going to be fun to watch.
No,
So you're saying
not, not.
no big noon kickoff is what you're saying.
Yeah. Is that the they're going to be whatever they're going to be shunted to whatever the most obnoxious time is nowadays.
Not good football will be played in those 3 games. So I can
It
pro
could be entertaining, but it will be entertaining in spite of the quality, not because of.
I hear that's what the Michigan State Wisconsin game was. I've been led to believe. I was too busy watching Tennessee Alabama, which was a actually fantastic game, to be bothered. But that's what I've been led to believe happened in that other game. So, yeah, I could definitely see that. All right, Blake, tell us about Penn State. What are we looking at here?
Well, tell me if this sounds familiar. They've got a 6-year senior at quarterback that the fan base really wants to see bench because they think of him as a game manager, average quarterback at best, and doesn't have the skill set to take the offense to the next level. Is that ringing any bells?
I mean,
It
it's kind of
sounds
rude to
like
talk
you
about Bryce Young that way.
it
Not
do,
even a
it
sixth
does
year.
it does sound like you're, not bothering to actually scout Penn State is what it sounds like, but okay, continue.
So our old friend Sean Clifford, you may remember him from what was 3 years ago, the last time these two teams played, still quarterback of Penn State. He's really kind of struggled this year. I think his last game against Michigan, he was 7-19 for 120 passing yards before he got knocked out of the game. So fans are, the first loss season, so the season's already lost. So they want to turn it over to their true freshman. I don't know how to say his last name, Drew Aller, Drew Aller. I don't know which one it is, but so yeah, things are going well for them offensively. It honestly very similar to Minnesota's offense. Not a great passing game. They do have some talent at wide receiver. I mean, they're Penn State. They should, but not a lot of explosiveness, and there's just not a lot of consistency in the passing game. They do have a good running back, Nick Singleton. He's a true freshman. I think he was a 5-star coming into this year. He's averaging 7 yards per carry. He's
He's very good.
very good. He's got 5 touchdowns on the year. They do have another true freshman, Catron Allen. Not quite as good, but they'll split carries with him and Singleton. And the offensive line has, up until last week, was playing pretty well. They kind of ran into a brick wall with Michigan, and which is going to happen. And there wasn't as much running room for Singleton or Allen last week, but we'll see how they fare against Minnesota's defense is Saturday, and hopefully the run fits are markedly improved compared to what they were against Illinois. Because I think that's, to me, that's where the game's going to be won or lost, is at the line of scrimmage. And if they can't stop Penn State's running game, it doesn't really matter if it's Clifford or Aller at quarterback. I think Penn State's going to want to run wild in this game on the ground and do what they want, impose their will against this Minnesota defense. So really hoping for an improved game from them. And then defensively for Penn State, really talented in the secondary. This might be the most talented secondary Minnesota's played up to this point. Really aggressive in coverage. Probably similar to what we saw from Illinois. A lot of man coverage, just not giving a lot of separation. So that kind of worries me, especially if you're going to have Ethan under center thrown into tight coverage. I mean, he threw two interceptions in less than ideal circumstances last week. I think hopefully better game plan, more preparation this week if he's starting, but that makes me nervous. And then up front, it's a talented defensive front. It's one that got really pushed around by Michigan on their offensive line. I think they racked up something like 400 rushing yards last week, but again, Minnesota's offensive line is not Michigan's offensive line, so I think they're going to have their work cut out for them there. It's a tough matchup for Minnesota against that Penn State defense, just because they're going to be stacking the box against the run to stop Mo Ibrahim, and their secondary can survive on an island. They have kind of paid for their aggressive coverage sometimes. Like, it's kind of feast or famine a little bit. They let up some big plays here and there. But again, I don't know if Minnesota has the guys at receiver to make those explosive plays and make them pay in man coverage. So it's got all the makings of a rock fight. A lot of people I seem to be expecting, at least on the Minnesota side, kind of a drubbing just because they see Penn State ranked number 16. But this is a team that's really struggled the last 2 weeks on offense against Michigan and Northwestern the week before that. So not exactly firing on all cylinders. And I do think Minnesota's defense is better than what they showed against Illinois. They just got outplayed, outcoached, out-schemed. And that doesn't happen every week with Joe Rossi and his defense. So I would imagine they're probably in better shape this week. But this one has low scoring affair written all over it, in my opinion.
So, okay, I've got it. I've completely changed my mind. Minnesota wins. Got it. Figured it out. Thank you for that. Optimism restored.
Okay, happy to be of service.
Not something that is just said in an Illinois bathroom anymore.
Optimism restored. All right, well,
you want to know something you should be optimistic about?
Basketball?
The University of Minnesota got a recruit, and I think I'm talking about it. So that's a reason.
A talented recruit, very talented.
Is he from Minnesota though?
He is both not one of us and the most one of us I've ever seen. So
please explain.
The recruit in question is Dennis Evans. Dennis Evans is a 7'1" center coming out of California. And Dennis Evans is already my favorite player on the University of Minnesota, because Dennis Evans' recruitment commitment video gave us the following facts about Dennis Evans. One, he is very good at blocking shots. And by very good at blocking shots, I mean he is unquestionably the best high school recruit in the country at blocking shots. And arguably, he's young, by the way. So he's young, which means he probably still has more growing to do in some aspect. But for his class, he might be the best shot blocker in that age class in the world who is not already professional. That's pretty good. Part of the problem that the University of Minnesota basketball team had last year, among several, they lost a lot of games, was that they didn't have any rim protection whatsoever. They had no true five. And while Dennis Evans comes in next year, Dennis Evans is a true classic rim-protecting five at the college level, where you can hang out in the paint. Very good. So that's one. Secondly, from an offensive game, has a passable jump shot. So you could see potentially him being able to step out in the future as something to develop and maybe hit a three occasionally. I'm not going to claim it's like Daniel Oturo level by any means, or a variety of the Maryland bigs over the years who've had that kind of stretch five capability. That's not where I expect Dennis Evans to play, but it does mean that he does potentially have a jumper. He has, at least in some highlight reels, some vaguely Kevin McHale moves, one of us, yay. He is the highest rated recruit that Minnesota has in outstate in something like 28 years, which realistically means he's the highest rated recruit in a lot longer than that. He is also, and here's the second bit, in his recruitment video, we learned the following things about Dennis Evans from Dennis Evans, because this dude is dope. Number one, he really likes ants, as in Ant-Man, the insect. And there is nothing that I think is more awesome than a person who would just absolutely tower over anyone being very interested in possibly the smallest thing that you could reasonably be interested in. So that's number one. Number two, his fashion idol is Tim Duncan. I don't know if our listeners have ever seen Tim Duncan's fashion choice. If you haven't, you should. But I'm going to turn it over to our resident big man, Chris. Tim Duncan, fashion idol for you or not?
If I recall correctly, Tim Duncan's fashion could be charitably described as oatmeal.
Yeah, I would describe Tim Duncan's fashion as comfort above all else.
I mean, in that regard, I can wholeheartedly embrace and endorse that stance. Comfort above all else is pretty much how I live my life.
If I took one thus of the Zubas shirts and I got on a wakeboard, I'm pretty sure I could sail across the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, I mean, comfort above all else. I mean, that's why I wear Zubas. It's like getting to wear pajamas in public. So I can respect that. I think I would hope that somebody at some point introduces him to Flex Taylor, because I would hope anybody who's that good at shot blocking could eventually get himself a spot in the league. And at that point, let's get Flex Taylor involved, because there's clearly better talent in the Twin Cities than a Tim Duncan level.
We are also not sponsored by Flex Tailoring, though. Again, we
oh please,
happily,
for the love of God,
happily like to be.
I don't remember his name, but kind sir, if you listen to this podcast, I will sell my soul in exchange for one of your suits.
And keep in mind, this man does have the ability to create water from the sky, so that soul is worth some money.
I mean, you're going to have to use a lot of fabric. I'm a very tall man. I have a very large belly. But I will gladly shill all the time on this podcast in exchange for a suit. Because Fleck is a well-dressed individual. I like the cut of his jib, is what I'm saying. So
the last thing that we should also take from Dennis Evans, so that's sort of one of us be, but I think these... particularly important is how I would expect him to slot into what I imagine Ben Johnson's ideal offense looks like, and also in some sense ideal defense, particularly at the college level, because of the nature of the game, because of the defenses you can play, what constitutes a legal defense, what doesn't constitute a legal defense, the rise of sort of no middle, pushing things to the baseline. Every defense, in the Big Ten especially, is so much better if there is someone who is just a dominant rim protector. And it's not in like a trite way. I mean, it's true, but it's also because the way the game structurally works now, if you have a dominant rim protector, you can be more aggressive, so much more aggressive on the wings. You can also funnel ball handlers, you can funnel passes into places, especially at the college level, that college athletes are not very good at shooting from. The same thing doesn't really work quite as well in the professional game because NBA basketball players are hilariously good. But at the college level, that's not the case. Dennis Evans can more or less guard the entirety of the paint by himself. He is that tall. He's also got a 7'7" wingspan, so even like longer wingspan than his height. He's already massive. That means for many things, he can just put a hand up and not be goaltending. This is a huge advantage to have. It's also a huge advantage to have if you are Ben Johnson, because it means with the other talent that Ben Johnson has brought in, and his recruiting has been quite excellent so far, it allows you to be a little bit more up-tempo, perhaps, if that's what Ben Johnson wants, knowing that you might be okay. Like, you can take some more risks on the defensive end in a way that they have not been able to do, and frankly don't have the capability of doing on this year's team. But that is something that I am so excited for, because in terms of, like, classic one of us, that is Michael Thompson and Kevin McHale. That's what they gave you. That is what Joel Prisbilla gave you. The great centers of Minnesota are these just massive shot-blocking dynamos. And Dennis Evans absolutely looks like that. I hope he immediately gets a name, image, and likeness from some ant research facility and from Tim Duncan's tailor.
Well, in case you couldn't tell by the level of excitement I had around Flex Taylor, football is doing its thing. I have a hard time getting super amped about it compared to talking about fashion, apparently. But we still have to do predictions. That's my segue to predictions. We still need to do them. The game is still happening. We will all still be very pleased if and when the Gophers win. I should say when, because Blake's preview obviously convinced me that that was what was going to happen, despite the prediction that's coming next. So what are your predictions? We're going to go back to Streets for his random, you know, pick of a stat.
Over under 3 drops by the wide receivers, and unfortunately I'm taking the over.
That doesn't sound promising. Blake, what do you got for us?
I've got Penn State coming out victorious on this one, 19-10. How they get to 19, hey, don't ask me. It just seems like a good ugly number, because I think it's going to be a relatively ugly game.
I mean, that seems fair. I have chosen to go with 21-10. I mean, I would love to say that I have actual faith that Minnesota will win, but they have given me no reason to actually believe that yet. So surprise me, prove me wrong. I will be happy to be wrong. I'm wrong a lot. This would be a great time for that to happen. So yeah, let's all hope that we're wrong. That would be wonderful. But in the meantime, friends, thank you for listening to the Sky U podcast. Go Gophers. Sky U Ma. Row the boat.